having a substantial amount of time and then giving up that time and restarting that time after a period of getting loaded again, I'm back to a state of gratitude, and I'm holding on to it like a motherfucker, because I did lose it in the past.
Yeah.
I did lose it over that course of 11 years. And I think a big part of how I lost that was by giving up, any open-mindedness to a power greater than myself. Like I closed my mind off to the God idea completely. And it made a lot of sense at the time, because, you know, when you stand back and you go, oh yeah, there's a intelligence out there that's up in the sky or whatever that controls the fact that I didn't turn my car into another car. And you think about like the actual hand of God, like touching the steering wheel to make sure that you don't crash your fucking car. Like it just makes, it's nonsense. My name's Willie. The angst and discomfort of my childhood led me to a life of drugs, alcohol, and crime. Today, I work hard to stay sober, to know myself well, and connect with a power greater than myself that I have historically struggled to understand.
I'm Cameron. Curveballs that life had thrown me had me seeking relief through substances. Today, I'm learning that sobriety is just the beginning. Self-love is a learned behavior, and that we never stop surrendering.
Listen to the stories of those who have been where you're at.
Our desire is that you'll hear something that will give you hope and help you to see that on the other side of pain is joy.
And on the other side of hell is peace. What's up, world? I'm Willie.
And I'm Cameron.
Welcome to the Other Side of Hell podcast.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Cameron.
How are you, man?
Welcome back to the show.
Here we are in it again.
Yeah, I always want to ask if you're fueled with brainwashed coffee.
Yeah.
Because brainwashed coffee is our sponsor.
Dude, I finally got some brainwashed coffee, some of the stuff Billy sent.
Yeah.
And I'm digging these new flavors.
Yeah, the new bags are cool too.
Yeah, I like the new bags. Kind of different.
Looks good. Yeah.
Colorful.
And, you know, brainwashedcoffeeco.com.
Mm-hmm. Remember.
Go support great coffee with a great cause. Goes back to the community, the recovery community. Billy is giving back because he's grateful to be a part of, you know, something so miraculous. Back from a seemingly hopeless state of mind.
You know, another person that's back from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
Jim with Valor Fitness, man. Oh, representing today.
Yeah, wearing my Valor Fitness brand shirt.
Yeah, it looks good, man.
Yeah. Feels good. I like his clothes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's athletic apparel, you know, because they believe fitness is a big part of, or can be a big part of recovery. And we've seen Jim boots on the ground out there helping people. They also
give back
and love that.
Yep.
That's awesome.
And
that's at valorfitnessclothing.com.
Yep. And, you know, last but not least is Stay Stopped.
Stay Stopped with Jackson.
Recovery brand apparel.
Boom.
Yeah, we're getting pretty good at this now that we've been kind of giving our sponsors out.
Yeah.
Love these guys, man. They're all three, you know, people that started their businesses in recovery to give back to the recovery community, that want to be a part of recovery, want to help people get better, have more, do better, all those things.
Yeah.
StayStopShop.com.
That's right. And we got some exciting stuff happening with Stay Stop.
Yep. So.
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, I'm glad to be here doing a show with you.
I am too, man. And we got a great war story guy that we love personally, local guy named Dan.
Good old Dan.
Yeah. Gave us a story. He does a lot of service work, man. And, you know, he got us thinking about his story. You guys are going to want to stick around and listen to his story because, you know, we get here and it's such a miracle because we have to ask the question, how are we not dead?
Right.
That's the kind of the topic that we got out of it. How are we not dead
after
all this?
We must have listened to a pretty good war story if the topic that we take away is how are we not dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, man. Like I know that there's been so many times in my recovery, where I've looked back on the things that I did in the heat of it, in my career, as Dan says, right?
Yeah.
And just wondered, like, I have no idea how, like, I'm still here. Like, how did I not get arrested? How did I not, you know, kill anybody? And how am I still alive?
Yeah.
And I think it's worth exploring, because truly, Willie, how are we not dead?
Yeah. Yeah. The question when before we started the show, we're writing some notes down, kind of talking about it. And one of the questions that came up, you know, is it divinity or is it luck? Right. And I guess, you know, you kind of put whatever purpose you want behind it. But to me, luck seems to run out, but divinity seems to stick around. As I've explored the God idea and started implementing God into my life, coming from atheism into, you know, an understanding of a power greater than myself, I can look back and I can kind of go, okay, luck didn't have a whole lot to do with that. Like, that seems like that was pretty, you know, provident or whatever, you know, I think that's the word I'm looking for. Like, it came from a higher place on purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, I was protected in that situation. When I was 12 years old, I ran away from home. I had my little heart broken by a girl.
Oh.
And, you know, by that age, I was already drinking and smoking. It wasn't like all the time, but I managed to gather up $18 in cash. I had an address in Las Vegas, Nevada, from a kid that had moved in with his dad, came to my school. His dad was a pipeline worker, and he came up from Nevada. He had a black trench coat. You know, super cool. Can't remember his name now, but
doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That trench coat is really all you need to remember.
Trench coat. And you know, I got my heart broken and decided that I needed to get out of town. And so I took the family Lincoln Continental. It's like a late 70s, early 80s Lincoln Continental. Pushed it out of the driveway, started it up.
Pushed it out of the driveway because it was quiet.
Yeah, I didn't want to wake up my mom.
Right.
Like even at that age, I was scheming and scamming.
Yeah, you knew.
You know?
You knew that you had to be sneaky about it.
And I remember I had two beers, a pack of cigarettes, and $18. And I was headed for Las Vegas.
Hitting the road.
And, you know, I got out of town, and I started driving towards Utah, which was west of where I was from, and fell asleep behind the wheel. And flew off the road. The car, you know, rolled end over end. And I came out of that car, out of that wreck with some bruises and some bumps and scrapes. I crawled out of a ditch and went up onto the highway. And I was walking up the middle of the highway, and the truck drivers, I remember listening to some of the reports, but the truck drivers were talking about somebody being on the highway. And one of them slowed down and stopped and picked me up. And I've never forgotten the look on his face, because for me, I've always had this, you know, this misunderstanding or this unrealistic idea of myself. Even back then, as a 12-year-old kid getting into a truck out in the middle of nowhere, just out of a car wreck, mm-hmm. He's wondering where my family's at, right? Obviously. And I didn't have my family with me. I was all alone. And the look on this guy's face was like, what in the fuck are you doing? Where is everybody?
Yeah.
You know, and that's just one example, you know, like.
I can only imagine.
How did that not be worse?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine like being that truck driver and coming up on a 12-year-old boy who smells like alcohol, bruised, cut, bleeding. And seeing the car and then just thinking, dude, like what's going on?
Yeah.
So what do you attribute that to? Like, let me ask you this. This is kind of an interesting question. What did you attribute that to then? And what do you attribute it to now?
Oh man. You know, we'll get into Dan's story, but he says something in his story that, you know, it had to have been divine, man. You know, it had to have been. God had to have been watching over me. You know, I've talked to my mom about that situation and many situations. My mom prayed for me a lot, and she's always kind of believed that none of her children would be lost completely. Mm-hmm. You know, none of us would be taken before our time. And she told me that that night, this was just one of many escapades that I had throughout my life. This was even before I even got rolling into the hard shit.
Right. Yeah.
Before my life got rough.
Right.
But, you know, she said she remembered that night. She had this overwhelming sense of impending doom, the sense of fear. And she went to sleep that night and she kept dreaming about hell. And she had this just really dark, weird sense of something wrong, you know, and then woke up to the phone call to come out and get me. And so, when I piece all that stuff together, you know, I like to think that that was, you know, definitely the hand of God that was watching over me, because, you know, how else would we have this podcast had I not survived that, right? How else would all these things that I have going on in my life, the people that we've been able to help and talk to and reach and all that stuff. But, you know, and that was just one, you know, I go back and I look through my life now, and God's always been trying to direct me to a place where I could have a relationship with it. You know, I can see that now.
Yeah. And you mean that directing it through all these moments where it should have been clear that God was there?
You'd think, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have many, many moments like that. You know, we talked last week about, briefly, we talked about, you know, this trip that I took to try and get sober on my own, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I drank the whole drive down there. It's like a 5-hour drive, you know, and I got a bottle just sitting shotgun with me that I'm sipping on. I don't remember, you know, like the last 2 hours of that drive. And the thing is that, you know, that's just one instance. In that particular drive, it's winter. The roads are really, really dangerous. You know, I'm going through canyon and curves and up climbing altitude and just up to this, you know, cabin in the middle of nowhere. And I don't even remember, you know, the last 2 hours of it. But there's so many instances like that for me behind the wheel where I'm hammered drunk and I have no recollection of it. And I don't know how I didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know how I didn't kill myself. And I don't know how I didn't even, you know, get into an accident or something at least. Like, I had another instance where my friends were getting married, and they were getting married in Salt Lake, which is about 30 miles away from where we are. And I showed up to their wedding drunk.
You know?
Like, I was hammered when I got there. And then they had a bar, of course. And plus, I brought my own stuff because that's how I roll. And so eventually it gets to the point, like it does in every sort of social situation like that, where it's like, okay, I'm going to leave now because otherwise you're going to tell me I can't drive. And then I've got to figure that out. And so I'm going to leave, little Irish goodbye. And I'm going to take off and, you know, like it'll be my benefit to go somewhere where I can continue to drink more and drink like I want to drink without judgment.
Right? Yeah.
So I left, and I, again, have no recollection of, you know, driving home.
Yeah.
30-mile drive, Saturday night. And evidently there were other people from the wedding who had left at the same time as me, and they were following me, you know.
Oh, really?
Well, unintentionally, right? They just happened to be following me, and I was all over the road, what they said. They actually called the bride, my friend, and said, hey, we just want to let you know, like, we're following him home and he is all over the road. Like, we're really worried and concerned. And
that's normal people.
Yeah. Yeah. Normal people. And here's the thing is, like, you know, my friend, the groom or the bride, they're both my friends, but She tells me this story later and I'm just like horrified. Like, this is what you need to be thinking about on your wedding night, right? Like, the asshole friend that decided to drive himself home drunk and like now all of a sudden somebody's calling you, like it's your problem, you know? And so I felt horrible, but I have no idea like how I even made it home. A, B, didn't get pulled over, and C, like, again, like, didn't kill anybody.
Yeah.
So like these, I mean, here's the thing is like when I was finally able to get into a program and start to get sober, looking at these moments for me was sort of a starting place of this idea that there is a power greater than me. You know, I was able to look at those and go, I have no explanation for that. I the only thing that makes sense is that something was looking out for me.
Yeah.
And from that place, I can say, so maybe there is something greater than myself.
Yeah.
You know,
I can see that.
Yeah. So
coming to a conclusion like that because of it, you know, because, you know, the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of stories of people doing the same thing that had a completely different outcome. And I don't know how, you know, the decision is made in those situations because, I've never forgotten the guy that came to my middle school and told the story. He did, I think he did 15 years in prison for killing a family in a drunk driving accident. And, got out, you know, this is at middle school. So, you know, it was 30 years ago, over 30 years ago, when he came in. So laws were a little bit different. He may never get out of prison now over something like that. Right. But back then it was a little bit different. You know, you could have 5 or 6 or 7 DUIs without going to prison, stuff like that. But I remember he came and he talked about living with the understanding and the realization that he did that, you know, and the feeling of walking around in the world with that over his head every day, all day, you know, a decision that turned out that changed the lives of everybody. It was a wake of disaster throughout the entire community. You know, there's so many lives that are affected by it. And it came down to him making the decision to do that. And he was going from school to school, talking about the dangers of drinking and driving, what the reality of that really is. Now, I remember knowing that he was telling the truth, right? I knew that he was saying, like, you know, if you drink and drive, this is the reality of what could happen. But, but I was at that age, I still wasn't emotionally connected enough to really be able to put it together that he's talking about me, you know, that could be a reality for me personally. And so, you know, when I think about all those little things, man, add all those up, and I guess it's gotta be divine. And I guess God doesn't care whether or not you believe in him. You know, for some of us, he believes in us a lot more than we believe in him. And you know, I guess that's a pretty good feeling, you know, but you take away any of it and I'm not here.
Yeah.
You know, like it takes every single one of them. And it's kind of fucking heavy now that we're talking about it.
Well, yeah. Like what I was thinking is when I was in the throes of the disease, you know, and I would hear about this kind of stuff that I had done or that, you know, people had witnessed or, you know, tell me about later that I forgot, you know, I would think to myself, like, how lucky I was. And I don't know that I ever looked at it as, well, I know for sure that I never looked at it as like a divine hand that was looking out for
me.
But I almost think like there was a part of me that was like, see, I'm good. Like I'm fine. Like I got this. Like I didn't kill anybody. I didn't hurt myself. Like, and I didn't get arrested. Boom. Like I'm good to keep.
That proves manageability.
Yeah, exactly. Like that proves that I'm good at what I'm doing here. You know? Yeah. And I mean, I'm grateful that none of those things had to happen in order for me to have, you know, this realization that things have to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if one of those things had happened, it would have been a moment for me to really look at what's happening in my life and the things that I'm doing, and, you know, hopefully begin a, like I said, begin a path of recovery.
Yeah.
But it really does, like, I don't know, like, now that I'm down the road a ways, and I, you know, and or even as soon as I was down the road a ways and sober, you know, like, it, I began to look at those situations a lot differently, and to think, like, you know, not, I'm not lucky and I'm not good.
Yeah.
And I'm, and my life is unmanageable. And somehow, despite that, you know, like, I never had any grave repercussions,
yeah,
you know, and that to me,
yeah, we're blessed over it.
Right.
You know, like fortunately we got the program, and mm-hmm. we're able to get, you know, go into treatment and be taught, you know, a different way of life, you know, and it seems like some of that grace is running out maybe in the world today. It seems like some of that luck is running out in the world today because, you know, people are dropping left and right because of this fentanyl shit. Like, the numbers are insane. I was talking to a guy last night who happens to be, you know, a fan of the show. Shout out to Alan. You know, it's good talking to you, but
nice.
He gave me some numbers last night, you know, and it's 3,000 people a day are dying from fentanyl. And it's the same risk that we were taking back then, right? It's like one at a time, and within every time we get loaded, we're loading the gun and spinning the fucking revolver, like, every single time. It's so, the reality of it is so, it's staggering, the reality of how close we were in so many situations, you know. And it's just, the drugs are more dirty today than they were back then. Like, the risk of an overdose due to the, you know, type of crank that Dan talks about in his story was so much lower.
Right.
Just because of the way it was being made back then. It seemed like the drugs were being made to get people high, where now it seems like a lot of them, especially the fentanyl, is being made to kill whoever takes it. And that's kind of the point behind the drug in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And what goes along with the drug itself is all this other dirty, rotten shit, you know, the human trafficking and child trafficking and the violence and murder and, you know, like, the dirty money and all that stuff. And it's just, it's amazing that we got here. And that's what makes me want to hold on to it so much more.
Yeah.
You know, today. Because I don't want my luck to run out. I don't want my grace to run out. Mm-hmm. I want to, you know, somehow, some way, show a way to thank God for the clarity that He gave me in so many, you know, different attempts. Like, because, you know, we tried to get sober for a long time before we did.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people do, you know, we get that idea and it comes from somewhere, you know, because it wasn't there last time. You know, I think we talked about that on the last episode, how, you know, it was working for me. I was getting high. I was drinking and driving, not feeling guilty, not feeling shame.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this time was different.
Right.
And, you know, I think that might be God also. Mm-hmm. You know, we come to a realization that what I'm doing isn't good. It's getting out of hand. Like, it's not funny anymore. It's not funny, and it's not going to be worth it, because I'm not going to be the guy standing on stage talking about how, you know, 15 years earlier I killed a family in a DUI. I'm the guy that's not getting out of prison because of it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, it's scary, man. Like, we hear all the time, like, we are the lucky ones. Oh, and, like, I have to really take that in, especially when, like you talked about, like, I think about the landscape that's out there today. Like, I know what it was like for me. And, like, and I, you know, I was somebody who, really got into opioids, you know, at the beginning of the opioid pandemic. Like as soon as Oxycontin was like a thing, yeah. I was into Oxycontin, yeah. you know. And so it's, but this fentanyl is just insane.
Yeah, you were getting pharmaceutical grade.
Right, like I was.
American, like documented Oxycontin.
Yeah, yeah, like it's made in a factory here in America by a big pharma and
yeah.
You know, like that's the stuff that I would use, but and I can only imagine like what I would be like now, because what I hear, you know, is that the people with fentanyl, if you are an addict and you hear that somebody has overdosed from some fentanyl, it's almost like you want that fentanyl more.
Wow.
Because you're like, damn, that must be some good shit. And I can see, like, I can go back mm-hmm. into the way that I felt back then.
Yeah.
And think like, sure. Dude. Yeah. Like that's good stuff. Right. And yeah. that's crazy to think that that's the space that we're in when we're just really, really, really in it. And to think that, you know, that's where we come from is that line of thinking
yeah.
to where we are today. Like, my God, you know, like we are
yeah.
incredibly, incredibly blessed and fortunate to be alive today and be here today.
Yeah. Like,
and sometimes, like, I don't know about you, Willie, and tell us about it, but I feel like it's kind of hard sometimes to hold on to that appreciation at this stage right. of the game, you know? Like, I have to really sit and think about and have these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, you know, this is heavy, dude.
Yeah, with you and with other alcoholics and addicts. And like, I need these conversations to remind me just how lucky I am.
Yeah, how fucking dangerous it really is out there. And not, you know, to your point, not just because of the drug itself, but because of the mindset right. that we get ourselves in to where, you know, again, you know, talking with Alan last night, he actually was talking about his last run in that very situation that you're talking about. He said he knew that he could die from the next shot that he took. And he was like, well, I'll just add a little bit more meth to come back from it just in case, you know, knowing that and kind of maybe slightly hoping for it or not caring, you know, mm-hmm. because we get to that point, we get to such a point of desperation where we can't go on and we can't not go on.
Right.
We're stuck in the allergy of the disease. And for me, fortunately right now, it's very easy for me to be in a state of gratitude because, you know, I restarted my time. Like I just got a year, mm-hmm. Not too long ago.
Congratulations.
After having 11. Yeah. Thank you. And so, you know, having a substantial amount of time and then giving up that time and restarting that time after a period of getting loaded again, I'm back to a state of gratitude and I'm holding on to it like a motherfucker because I did lose it in the past.
Yeah.
I did lose it over that course of 11 years. And I think a big part of how I lost that was by giving up, any open-mindedness to a power greater than myself. Like I closed my mind off to the God idea completely. And mm-hmm. it made a lot of sense at the time because, you know, when you stand back and you go, oh yeah, there's a intelligence out there that's up in the sky or
right.
whatever that controls the fact that I didn't turn my car into another car. And you think about like the actual hand of God, like touching the steering wheel to make sure that you don't crash your fucking car. Like it just makes it's nonsense,
mm-hmm.
you know? And mm-hmm. so, but I'm a little bit more open to that today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe it is, you know, maybe that drug dealer that was coming to kill me because I owed him money his car didn't start for a reason, and I never even knew about it. Like all the stuff that goes behind the scenes that keeps me safe and protected. You know, I'm a lot more open to that today because I think that, you know, it was taking back self is what led to the drop of the appreciation of the original, you know, sobriety, the original desperation that I once felt, and having some success and some blessings in my life made me forget that I came from a place of complete darkness and desperation. I came from a place where I didn't have anything. I didn't have anywhere to go. Everybody was disappointed in me. Nobody trusted me. Like the cops were always looking out, like my life was a mess. And I got sober and got some things, and I just forgot how bad that felt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I let go of God, and then I got drunk on self a little, you know, I got drunk on self for a lot longer than I realized. And that eventually led back to, you know, taking just one, not being honest about it, and then believing that I could probably do it if I could just manage well.
Right.
Which put me back into another state of desperation because I needed God. And like the cycle continued, and I don't know, man. Like it's like trying to explain salt to somebody that's never ate salt. Like, how do I sit here and say, in, you know, in ways that aren't just anecdotal, that, you know, God protected me from myself for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
and probably still does.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Like,
okay,
you have a newfound desperation because of a relapse, and you know that you don't want to get back to this state of complacency and, you know, self, and obviously some denial in what is actually needed to be successful in your sobriety. What do you do now, like, to maintain that attitude? Like, mm-hmm. like for me, like, I know I've got to be just fucking completely humbled, right? And just be like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I'm just going to take the suggestions of those around me who have done what I've done and have got what I want. Like, what would you say, like, is a part of now maintaining that attitude to where you can see, you know, that God needs to be a part of your life?
Yeah. Well, a big part of it for me is prayer, you know, open mouth prayer with my wife. Which is something that I didn't do
totally
before.
Knew.
Yeah. At all. Being completely open to the entirety of the understanding of God. Like right now I'm starting to, explore the Jesus idea because, you know, I want to know how important or if important or whatever that is. You know, I work with my sponsor all the time. I talk to him several times a week. I'm dedicated to 3 meetings a week. I don't miss certain ones unless there's something very, very important, but I make that up. I continue to work the maintenance steps. When I have behaviors that aren't, you know, in line with the spiritual practice that I try to live, I admit those things. You know, I had some stuff happen that was like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, like I tried to steal some shit from Home Depot the other day, and I realized it and made it right, and then called my sponsor and was like, dude, check out what just happened.
Well,
living that life is how, you know, all those things put together is what I do today.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Prayer is probably the biggest.
So you just find that, like, constant connection.
Yeah, I'm turning into that fucking God guy that I was afraid to turn into.
Like, hearing you talk about Jesus is weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But I want to be open to it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, it's great. Like, I think it's great. I mean, in all aspects, like, just to hear you, because I know with you specifically, like, one of the biggest things is why. Like, I just want to know why.
Yeah.
You know, like, why this, why that? And I don't hear that anymore. It's like, yeah. I don't hear the why. And I just hear more of like, why not? Like, yeah. You know, just let it be and be okay with it.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Man. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Like, it's been cool.
It's humbling.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As you said, right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a humbling experience. I want less of me and more of whatever that is.
Right. Yeah.
Right. This step three thing, you know, I think about that, turning my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand him, I look at how I managed my life up to my relapse.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, I had a lot of things that should have indicated manageability.
Right.
And I relapsed.
Yeah.
So I fucking missed something there.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to go back to, like, I have too much to lose now to drink and drive and kill somebody.
Yeah.
Like, it's a price that I'm not willing to pay today at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. If it can be avoided through, you know, standing on a mountaintop and saying, I don't know how it works, but today I believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And judge me, don't judge me, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care anymore. Where before I would have like I, somebody, why do you believe in God? And I go, I don't know. They go, well, that's stupid. I'd be like, you're right. I shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Today I don't give a, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit of that from you.
Yeah. Well,
cause this is better than what I had.
Oh, well, yeah, it seems to be working.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really awesome to just hear you talk about, the way that God is working in your life today.
Yeah. Thanks.
And I think that has to do with exactly what we're talking about, you know, like, how are we still here? Like, we still are able to see these moments of like, How did I get to this? How did I get to where I am now? Like, if you would have told me 12 years ago that this is what my life would look like today, I would have called bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, like, I couldn't think that far into the future. Like, I couldn't think a year into the future, 2 years, 3 years, seven. I, you know, like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And like, now to be where I'm at and to look back on how things were, it's like, my God, it's like you're saying, like, I couldn't give this up for that.
Yeah.
You know, for what was going on then? Like, you know, what was that? It's insanity.
Yeah. Right?
It's the disease. So one thing Dan said in his story that I really appreciated, without one of those things,
yep,
you know, I'm not here.
Yeah.
Without
take away one of my drunks.
Yeah. You know, like, things had to go exactly how they needed to go in order for him to be, you know, who he is today.
Yeah.
And to have the life that he does today. And that's true for any of us.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're lucky. You know, it doesn't always feel that way, but we are.
We are lucky.
And
very blessed.
I remember him, you know, talking, and this is, I've been here before, you know, like, where I see homeless people on the side of the road and I'm like, maybe those guys got it figured out.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? What's going on with me inside if I'm looking at, you know, the homeless people and thinking those guys just get to drink all day, like, they don't gotta go to work, like, you know, like, that's a good indication that Cameron needs to go, you know, to a meeting or talk to somebody or do something.
Do some program.
Yeah, exactly. So we're lucky that we have those in our lives today.
And yeah. And speaking of Dan, like, I think, you know, we pulled this great topic. Thank you, Dan, so much for giving us an opportunity to go back and reflect on, you know, the miracle that we are here. And I think we'll just go ahead and let everybody hear how we got that topic and who Dan is and let it roll. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it.
Without further ado, here is Dan's war story.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dan. I figure I'm late to the game because of my age, but at the same time, I'm early, you know? Here's the deal. I've spent 45 years of my existence drinking and doing every drug known to man, and some I made up probably along the way somewhere. I drove truck most of my life, so I was never in one place very long. I started doing that, and that led me into using dope. You know, back then we used to call it crank. It was good stuff, you know. I remember you could take, you fill it up, put little capsules in there, you know, and I'd put one capsule in there, and I could take that capsule and I could leave Salt Lake. I could drive all the way to California, Los Angeles, unload, go up the coast, Bakersfield, Fresno, all the way up there, load of produce, and over to Salinas, and then I'd come back across. I'd come all the way back and never sleep. That was great. And as soon as I got back, I'd take about 3, 4, 5 shots off a whiskey bottle, and then I could sleep for a while. And then I would get up and I would take that truck and I would go to New York. I did that for quite a long time. For a while, it suited me. You know, everything was good. I was making good money. I was cruising along doing it. You know, I could use it at my leisure, so to speak. Somewhere along the way, I crossed that invisible line that we all cross, where I became a full-blown alcoholic and a drug user. I think the only reason I never really got into any trouble in that area was because I was driving. I was never in the same place long enough to get in trouble, you know. But I can tell you that there for a minute, a good minute, I would be running back to California, and I would leave a little place over there at truck stop in Wyoming, and I would have just damn near the entire town of Kemmer, Wyoming's payroll in my truck. And I'd run out there and buy what they would want, and I'd bring it back and drop it off that little truck stop, and they were having a great time. I used to do stuff like that all the time. I don't know why I never got hung up or you know, I get pulled over by the highway patrol all the time, you know, and have literally pounds and whiskey and everything, and never got a problem with it. I've done, in my opinion, some of the dumbest shit in the world that anybody could ever imagine doing, you know, all the way from driving around naked, run 122 miles an hour, outrunning cops and just doing dumb stuff, you know. I was going across Nevada one evening, and I was running about 120 miles an hour, and I could hear him on the scanner. Oh, we got this son of a bitch. And I had one coming at me from the west and one climbing the mountain Pequop over there to turn around and come get me. I know that hill real well. There's nowhere on that hill that you can do a U-turn in the meeting. You have to go all the way to the top of the hill. So I knew about how much time I had. I zipped down the bottom of there. I took that exit off I-80 there into Wells, Nevada, and slung around back at Donna's whorehouse. And I ran inside there beating on the door. And, Donna, you got to hide me. You got to hide me. And they stuck me in a closet. And I could hear him coming through there, beating on the door. Where is that son of a bitch? You know, we know he's here. And that led to a lot of interesting things I did in my life. But I used to stop, and I was hauling meat. I used to stop there and drop turkeys off to them around Christmas time and hams and stuff. And, you know, then I'd come back and they'd take me in there and get all hooked up. And, you know, they'd do my laundry and fill my thermos up, and I'd take a shower and shit. pretty soon there's a couple of gals there that lived in Salt Lake area. And, hey, we need to ride to Salt Lake. Yeah, climb in. I was hauling them into Salt Lake. And then I turn around and haul back out there on the weekend. And then I turn around and take them. You know, I was doing a little bit of, I thought, community service at that time. But anyway, you know, I long time doing that, little by little things deteriorate. You know, I don't think anybody wakes up one day and decides to stretch. Yawn, oh, shit, I think I'll just become an alcoholic or a drug addict today and fuck my life up and throw all my shit away. It never happens like that. I followed a very carefully laid track, you know, in my mind. If you do this, you can get that. And then you can do that, you know, and you can get this much, sell this much, and have yours over here and pay this and do. And you guys know what I'm talking about. It's a fucking psycho dribble. You know, that's all it is. It bobs here and it bobs there. You know, it comes up and it beats the hell out of you. In my career, I've lost, I don't know, a couple of houses, two or three trucks, my self-respect, my family, everything. And at the end of my career, the end of my using career, I call it, nobody would have anything to do with me. Nobody. My family wouldn't. My friends wouldn't, you know. And a friend of mine, I haven't seen him in a long time, but a really good friend of mine, he's not an alcoholic. He looked at me and he said, you know, Dan, there's a time in life, and everybody should know this, but either you do the drugs or the drugs do you. And I thought, you know, it never left me. And I could see how they were doing me. You know, I couldn't get up without having a line of dope. Okay. And I couldn't go to sleep without having a half a glass of whiskey. That's just how it was. Driving up down the road, I would drive all across Nevada and Wyoming, Nebraska, Iowa, and I would stop at different places and I would walk out to the end. You know, there's a fence there that separates the highway from private property and stuff. I'd get by a particular fence post, dig a hole, and I'd bury a whiskey bottle there just in case. Because I've been stuck in Wyoming and Nevada and across there in the wintertime when the weather gets bad and they close the road. And I thought, man, if I get stuck right here again, I'll have a bottle right there. And there's still plenty of places across there. I don't know. I've never dug them up. Maybe someday some antique fucker or a treasure hunter will find them. I don't know. But I used to do dumb shit like that to feed my habit. I've had a powerful thirst for a lot of years. Toward the end of my drinking, I was just worthless. You know, I would look in the mirror and all I could see was this black, empty hole. It looked like a machine running. That's it. Just a machine. Didn't care who you were. Didn't care what you did. Didn't care nothing. You know, and if I wanted to hurt you, I would. I didn't care. You know, it was like this. I know I was down in the storage shed. I'd rented a car from the Enterprise place. And I told this guy, I said, look, there's $50 on this card. I have this car 5 days. When I'm done, I'll pay you cash. He said, okay. So I took off. And 2 days later, they called it in stolen. Okay. And they, you know, they got beat finders or whatever that shit is, fancy fucking crap. Anyway, they knew right where I was. So the police showed up to my storage unit and I was all lit up, drunk, you know, big chopping lines and stuff. And I hear them pound on the door and they said, come on, there, your hands up. And I was like, fuck you, come and get me. And they did. You know, that was one of their shining moments, I guess. Anyway, I wound up in jail and I was talking to a doctor up there that was trying to help people. And, you know, at that particular point in my life, I had come to the conclusion that the only way to even try to live life anymore was to just tell the truth. You know, it didn't matter. They wouldn't believe me anyway. So why not tell them the truth? I don't need to make nothing up. I'd spent years doing that and it didn't work. So he says, well, where are you going? And I says, well, I'm going to go up the hill over here and I'm going to beat this fucker half to death and take his shit from him. And then I don't know after that. And he decided to keep me in the nut ward there, you know, like son's a bitch. I didn't know he could do that. He did. Well, I went like that for a minute in there. They let me out. It took about a month before I was in there again, you know, pretty much same circumstances, except I was going to shoot this guy this time. And that was a mess. Anyway, he asked me to give him 30 days and I told him I would. And he said, if you don't like any of this, then you go ahead and shoot the guy. And I said, okay, I agreed to that. So I wound up being transported to the ACT in Ogden. They called a Uber car to come and take me up there. And I got in that guy's car and I thought, man, this is going to be a cakewalk. As the first time he stops, I had one hand on the seatbelt released and the other one on the door. And I thought, all he's got to do is stop and I am gone. Pistol-y. He left the hospital up there. And that son of a bitch come down through Bountiful, never stopped at one red light, never ran the stop sign at the bottom of the hill by the hospital. And the next time he stopped, that car was right in front of the ACT in Ogden. And I got out of the car and I just looked up and I said, all right, God, I give. And so I went in, the ACT took me in there. My story's like this, okay? I don't know if I did more drugs or drank more whiskey than anybody else out there. I don't know. It doesn't matter if I did or didn't. I don't care. What I know is I drank enough and I did enough for me. Okay. If you take away one of my episodes or one of my drunks, one of my, I'm not here right now. It took everything I did to get me here. Okay. And I'm talking about, I used to run from New York to San Francisco, and I did that every 9 days by myself for about a year and a half. And basically just beat your body up to a pulp to where you can't think, you can't do anything anymore. It's like a machine, you know? And I had this much dope. I knew it would take me this far. And when I got to this point, I had to take probably about a pint or more. And then I could sleep for this long on that pint. And then I would get up and do this much dope and go and back up just like that. Just like a machine. That's all I was. I haven't thought about some of this stuff in a long time. It's amazing how things in a person's life, when you look back. I remember I wouldn't pray because I figured if I didn't pray, God wouldn't know where I was. And if I prayed, then he would know where I was. And I was so ashamed and embarrassed and everything else, that of what I had done with my life, which amounted to nothing. It would have been easy to do nothing. Okay. I figured I was fighting against him. That's what it boiled down to. I just figured out of sight, out of mind. And I look back now and I can see how he was there all around. I don't know how many times I should have been killed. That you can't see 10 feet in front of you. It's snowing. It's 40, 30 below zero, whatever, solid ice on the freeway. And I'm out there going 100 miles an hour thinking I'm cutting a fat hog in the ass, because everybody else is parked and I'm still going. And I look back at that and I think, Judas Priest, all you had to do was hit a spot that, not paying attention, the wind hit you a little bit wrong or different, and off you are in the ditch upside down or dead. I've seen a lot of death in my life. My uncle drank himself to death when I was younger. I was there when he died. One of my cousins called me. I was sober, I guess it was. And he'd call me up all drunk. Hey, why don't you take me to one of those classes with you or something? And, I didn't have time. This was before cell phones. I didn't have time to really talk to him. I was in a hurry. And I remember telling him, George, I ain't got time for this shit right now. And I hung up. When they found him 3 days later, he still had the phone and it was my number that he'd called on his phone, And he got drunk enough. He fell over a table in his house and broke his neck and laid there and died. And that was directly after our conversation. And that fucked with me for a long, long time. What if I'd have talked to him? What if I'd have gone on all this stuff you play through your head? And I drank over that for a long damn time. I finally got to a point I was going to take my life. I couldn't take this no more. My first sponsor, I'll call him, little short guy, bald, pissed me off all the time. He said, "Why don't you quit whining about that and write him a letter?" And my first response was, "Well, he's dead." You know, "Well, yeah, but why don't you write him a letter?" And I said, "Huh, never thought of that. Okay." So I wrote him a letter. Actually, I did this not very long ago. That's how long that one's eating on me, right? he died in 2000, and he died in 2000. And it took me till just this past year to do this. I wrote him a letter, and I went down to his grave, and I sat there, and I just bawled and read him the letter. And I'm here to tell you, when I got done with that, I felt the most overwhelming, peaceful feeling, like it was okay. It was like he was telling me, "Hey, it's okay, you know." But I also felt, "Pay attention, because this could be you." But I haven't really, that hasn't haunted me no more like it's done in the past, you know. So there's weight to these things they tell you in this program, you know. Try this, try that. And I used to think, "Well, that's bullshit. That doesn't make any sense. This guy's foolish. What the fuck does he know anyway?" You know. And now I'm telling you, when I go about my life, and March, it was about March 25th. They took me over there to the ACT in Ogden in 2018. And, I was so fucked up. Okay. That it was about sometime in the first week in April before I realized where I was. And, you know, Kelly, my counselor over there, and then they kept saying, "Dan, you need to pick a day." Said, "What are you talking about?" Said, "Well, you need to pick a clean day." I was like, "All right, April 1st, you know, fuck, like, I should be able to remember that, you know." I never dawned on me that it was April Fool's Day, but that's my clean day. That's the day I say I've been clean, April 1st. Wow. And, you know, I'm telling you this, okay? I know very little, but I know one thing for sure. When desperation meets willingness, the miracle of recovery happens. And if you're not desperate, you're going to get short shot, okay? This program is for somebody that is willing to give up what you are to become what God would have you be. That's what this program is. If you think this is going to be a wash it out, stick it to the side, you can have your stuff on the side like you, fuck that. That doesn't work. Okay. I'm now coming to the end of my sixth year in my new life. Okay. That I never thought I could have without drugs and without alcohol. And how the hell you come up with that, I don't know. You know, nobody told me to have that. That's what I feel. That's what I feel inside me. I've been through the steps as best I could, okay? And I still continue to use them to my advantage when something crops up. You know, and if you got something eating on you, this is what I found out for me. When I got something in my head and it won't leave my head, then I need to pay attention to it and I need to do something about it. Okay. It can stay in my head for a long time, but until I do something about it, that's where it stays, in my head. I got two guys in my head, one on the left side, one on the right side. The one on the left side's selling horse shit. The one on the right side's buying horse shit. Okay. And these two guys think, I don't know who they are, but the one guy's selling it, so the other guy buys it. Okay. And then when he buys all that guy's got, then that fucker runs over and steals it all back from him and sells it to him again. And I'm buying that, see? And I mean, it sounds kind of funny, and it is kind of funny. It sounds stupid, but that's what I do, okay? I buy my own fucking lies, right? I buy my own shit, okay? It's dumb, you know, but I have a disease that tells me I ain't got it. Okay. And you know, I'm sitting here now and I'm, you know, I start thinking like, God, you know, was it really that bad in jail? I mean, it's not that bad sleeping on them hard fucking once, you know, really, the food's not that, oh shit, come on. Who are you trying to kid? You know, see what's going on is in the back of my head. where I don't even know I got brains. Okay. My brain is telling me, I need this drug. See, and so I'm trying to find a way to get it. It doesn't matter how deep the hole is you dug or how wide it is. Okay. It could be halfway to China. There's only 12 steps to get out of that hole. Okay. And they're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And every step that you take, a little more light shines in and you see a little more hope, and it allows you to make a little more of a commitment. And then you take a little bit bigger step of faith, and that generates a little more hope, and your commitment gets larger and expands, and it keeps evolving like that. It keeps going like that until you're standing in the sunlight of the Spirit. Okay. And that's what I try to do today. My only job today is to be of maximum use to God. Okay. I put all my wants and wishes aside. And I find that when I'm busy helping other alcoholics, helping other people, I get what I want along the way. I have needs, I have wants. I don't always get what I want, but I always seem to have what I need. You know, I don't know. Anyway, that's a small part of it, but it, you know, it covers pretty good track. And, you know, I hope it done somebody good, you know, and I hope for hell's sakes, if you got none, just try it for 6 months. Shit, you got to have a job, try it out for 6 months before you even like some of it. If you don't like it, you can go get a bottle, right? All right. Anyway, thanks for letting me share, you guys. And again, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Dan. Thanks.
Boom.
Yep.
There you go.
Deep voice.
Yeah. Don't you just love his voice?
Yeah.
That's Dan, everybody.
Yeah. And it, like, big bear of a wisdom, like, great.
Yeah. I was telling you, like, I feel like he's like this cowboy poet.
Yeah.
Like, born in the wrong generation. just great, man. Just,
yeah.
You guys can hear how we got this topic. Like, you know, Dan went through a lot of shit.
He
put himself in a lot of dangerous situations and scenarios, and it's a wonder, you know, that he's still not in jail or, you know, still around.
Yeah. He's pretty great, man. Yeah, it was funny. Cameron mentioned, you know, the truck driving and the crank, and he said, you said, reminded me of my dad, because, you know, I told that story too. Like, the first time I ever saw crank was, it was my dad's, and he used it to drive truck,
right?
Get across country, you know, and it seemed like maybe it was a common thing, you know, pretty common theme with those guys. But I am grateful that he's found recovery, because he helps a lot of people now. He's director of a sober living place and helps people get in there. He holds service positions both at the group and the area level. You know, his life is sobriety, and, you know, such a different person. Like, it's hard to imagine what these people are like,
right?
In the throes of addiction.
What I actually really like about his story is kind of how he got into recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being somebody who basically just lost the ability to lie. Yeah. You know, he's like, well, I got to a point in my life where I just decided honesty was better.
Yeah.
So he tells the truth, and then they're like, okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah. Why don't you stick around just a little bit longer? don't go shoot that guy just yet.
But you just do that. You know, give us 30 days.
Yeah, exactly. And then from there he went to the ACT, which is where, you know, I did my treatment, and so many people here and in the area, and
yeah,
like him, I owe them my life. And so
great, you know, program. You know, one of the cool things about getting these stories is I get a little bit more of the story before and after the show, and you know, I know Dan personally, I see him a lot, but you know, he was talking about that time that he went down there and told him, he's like, you know, I don't know, I guess I'm gonna, you know, go shoot that fucker, and then I'm gonna go shoot myself. And he told a little bit more about that, and he goes, well, you know, this other guy came in, and because Dan's ego was where it was at,
mm-hmm.
he was like, hey, cool, you know, is it okay if I can see your gun? And Dan's like, oh yeah, you know, here, check out my piece. And so he gives that guy his gun, and he's like, yeah, we're just gonna go ahead and keep this, and then, you know, you can stay here for a while. Well, when Dan went into treatment, he had two slugs, one for him and one for that other guy. And, you know, he was talking about being there and with that counselor, he gave that counselor one of those bullets. And he said, I don't need this one, but I'm going to hold on to this other one for a while. And after a little bit of time of sobriety, he went back to thank that counselor for what he had done in his life. And he gave him that other slug and said, here, why don't you keep this one? I don't need it anymore either. He didn't tell me whose bullet he kept, whether it was his or the other guy's, but that's the power of the program. That's the power of God working in our lives. You know, we go from a place of dead certainty that the world is a dangerous place and we need to protect ourselves and get everything that we can from it, or we will go without, to a place where we know that God has our back and everything's taken care of and we don't need that bullet anymore. We don't need it for them and we don't need it for ourselves.
Yeah. That's, thanks for sharing that. I actually got the chills. Like that's, I mean, that's powerful, man.
Yeah.
Like, and that's,
that how is, are we not dead?
Yeah, exactly. That's such a good reminder of where we come from and then where we get to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I just feel incredibly blessed to be where I'm at today.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if I would have, you know, I don't know if I would have continued to use and drink if I had stayed on the path that I was before. I do know that, I'm grateful for it because I've gained so much from having gone through all that.
Yeah.
I don't know. To think that it all came from a drug problem sometimes.
It's
pretty amazing.
Very grateful. Grateful for you. Grateful for Dan. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Dan. That was good.
Yeah. Okay. What do you say?
Let's wrap it up and get out of here.
Let's wrap it.
Yeah. Okay. Good show.
Thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks for all the support. Alan, thanks for the support for the show.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan.
Alan and Alicia.
And Alicia.
Yeah. It was awesome seeing you guys this weekend.
Love fans.
With that, we'll see you on the other side.
Remember, you are worth the work.